Support for WGTD comes from the Racine Theater Guild, presenting Stand and Deliver, a true underdog story about perseverance in the face of adversity, April 14th through the 23rd. For more information and tickets, visit racinetheater.org.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Welcome to Community Matters. This is Xander Miller. Today, I'm going to talk about an issue that has relatively recently made a big headline for Kenosha, but is also an issue each of us face each and every day. It's also an area where, in my work, I will hear questions and concerns almost daily. I will hear issues about folks with emails. Emails that they don't know where they came from or how access was given to that email. I'll hear issues about lost passwords or someone else having access to their online accounts. So what I'm going to talk about for today is cybersecurity. At this point in time, we are all somehow connected to a network or have an online account that is locked behind a username and a password. We need emails to apply for jobs. We need a social security account to check on our benefits. Whether we want it or not, we will at some point be forced to go online, create an account, and set a password. To even get to that point, we need an email address that allows for communication with others, for others to communicate with us, and to sign up for different services. The issue and why cybersecurity is important is that every account we have is a potential vulnerability. Accounts have information stored on them. Even if it's just your phone number or the name of a contact or what your password is. If someone has that information without your explicit permission and they wish to use that information maliciously, it can lead to issues and problems down the line. So in September of 2022, Kenosha Unified School District released a press release regarding a cybersecurity incident. KUSD took portions of their network offline and began working with a cybersecurity firm and law enforcement regarding the incident. Cyber attacks like this one had been increasing in 2022 and even from 2021. For example, on September 6th of 2022, the second largest school district in the United States, Los Angeles Unified, released a press release that they were targeted by a ransomware attack. Ransomware is a form of malicious software or malware that encrypts files on a device, rendering any files and systems that rely on them unusable. The malicious actors then demand a ransom in exchange for decryption of those files. So they take someone's locked goods, they put them in their own lockbox, and ask for money to give the key back. In October of 2021, Wisconsin Public Radio even talked about an article regarding rising ransomware attacks on school districts and how schools tend to be a target because their cybersecurity networks, their computer networks, and that infrastructure tends to be less guarded than other businesses or bigger businesses out there. The ransomware attack at KOSD forced the shutdown of many electronic communications from the school as a countermeasure. That also meant that those files were accessible to hackers, even with that network down. This has lasted longer and become a larger issue even after clearing up the network and making preventative measures. On December 2nd of 2022, WGTD reported that KOSD was still dealing with the after effects of September's incident. A letter was sent to employees that the incident involved ransomware and that employees' names and social security numbers may have been accessed. While there weren't reports of misuse of the personal information, this incident still shows where having an awareness of cybersecurity is key for Kenosians. Now, I know all of that sounds scary. Honestly, it is scary. I've had my own password mishaps and lost passwords. I've also had my own accounts taken at a time and used for malicious acts. And that is scary itself. But this is why I want to have this conversation. While cybercrime is a massive industry, the steps to protecting yourself aren't high tech. Avoiding cybersecurity incidents is more about awareness than it is about technology. I will say that each time that I have gone down a route of having my accounts taken, or each time that an account was stolen and used maliciously, it was purely because it was a new method that I didn't know about. And as soon as I learned and became aware of that method, I have been able to keep myself secure online. So let's start talking about how we can actually protect ourselves online. First, let's talk about what we are protecting. In this case, it's protecting who you are online. Better way to say that is making sure you are, well, you. For almost every account that you make for anything, be it your bank account, an email account, social media accounts, even having a cell phone now, you are going to need a username and a password. Of these, it's our passwords that need protection. Our usernames just stand for how we call each other. It's kind of like giving each other names, knowing that that's your username, that's the front face. But the password is the key to your account. And I am asked about passwords constantly. It's one of the most common things I'm asked whenever I am asked about cybersecurity is about passwords. There's a few trends that I see in my work about these questions. People ask, what is a good password? Or how many characters do I need for my password? Which is pretty funny because every single website will give different requirements for what they need for the passwords. And a really common one is, how am I supposed to remember my passwords? Well, one of the most recommended tips from experts in cybersecurity is not to think about creating passwords that have an arbitrary amount of characters, use a capital or a number or a special character. Our understanding of passwords and security has evolved from there. What they want us to think about is creating passphrases rather than passwords. Passphrases are strings of easy to remember text. They're actually harder to crack than a stereotypical 8-character random character password. And the reason that is because of the length of a passphrase. I'll use a very common phrase just as an example, but just note that you shouldn't be using common phrases for creating a passphrase at all. So the phrase I'm going to use is Mary had a little lamb. It's a total of 22 characters. The spaces count as a character. And according to security.org's How Secure Is My Password tool, it would take a computer about 1 quintillion years to crack a passphrase of that length. And that's all it is. Mary had a little lamb. 1 quintillion years. Now, a random 8-character password using that same tool takes about 3 hours to crack. Again, it has nothing to do with picking a great 8-character password versus using a phrase. It has everything to do with the amount of characters that phrase is. Now, Mary had a little lamb. There's a reason it's a common phrase. It's very easy to remember. And creating a passphrase for yourself should be something easy to remember. So there are some tips for creating passphrases that you can use. You can use something personal to you. If you know where you were born or you have a particularly strong memory, you can use that as part of a passphrase. As long as it's something personal to you that others aren't going to just guess, that's good. Something else you can try is combining different things to create a passphrase. So different important memories, locations, pets. You could choose the name of your first dog and then the make of your car and maybe make a little story about taking your dog in that car. That could make a reasonable passphrase. A tip I've actually gotten when I'm working with patrons, I saw something fairly recent. I thought it was a pretty good tip. It has to do with creating passwords for so many different websites. And if you're not used to using a password manager, which we'll talk about later, if you're not using a password manager, you could create a passphrase that includes the name of the website. So if we're doing Mary had a little lamb, you could say something like Mary had a little lamb on Google, or Mary had a little lamb on Instagram. You're actually increasing the amount of characters, but you're adding a little something extra to that passphrase that you're going to know. Now, another tip that is given about passwords and passphrases, and I'm going to use those words interchangeably, is that you should never use the same password for a different site. So if you have a Gmail account, you shouldn't use the same password as for your Facebook account. And that's because if you have one of those compromised in some way or some form, then your other accounts are also compromised. Keep in mind, your username is usually something public, but your password isn't. If your username is already known and someone uses a password, they've cracked it somehow, they use it on another thing and they get in, that's, you're out of luck at that point. Now, remembering a ton of passwords is difficult. And even with that trick, you know, you might forget something or maybe even that you're on that site. Luckily, we have developed tools that help us with keeping track of our passwords. And these are called password managers. Password managers are tools that you'll have a username and password, of course, but this is going to be your master password. This is going to be how you gain access to that password manager. The username is going to be the username only visible in that password manager. And it's going to store as well as create passwords for you for all of the websites that you visit. There are paid password managers out there. You've likely seen an ad for LastPass in the world. I've gotten to use LastPass myself. It's pretty good, but there is an option available completely for free, and that is actually your web browser. You've probably experienced it already. Your web browser, whenever you make a new account, will ask, do you want Google or Firefox or Edge to remember this password for you? And if you say yes, your password is then stored onto that web browser, assuming that you have an account with that web browser. Now, the most popular web browser out there is Google Chrome. And if you have a Google account, meaning you have a Gmail account or you even have a YouTube account, you already have an account on Google Chrome as well. So you can use that and your web browser to save passwords. And not just save them, create new ones. As long as your master password, if you're using Google Chrome, that's going to be your Chrome login, your Gmail login information. As long as that master password is the most secure password that you have, then you can use your web browser as a password manager to generate strong passwords that are difficult to guess. You can do this on any modern web browser that's available. Microsoft Edge has its own way of saving passwords for you, as well as Firefox. Now, I've been focusing on passwords because passwords are one of the easiest things to manage for yourself. The thing is, passwords aren't necessarily the way hackers are making these big ransomware attacks and malware attacks on companies or on schools like KUSD or even just your own bank account even. It's not really password cracking that is doing it. What is doing it are attacks that rely on you. These are a variety of what's called phishing, spelled P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. It's related to phishing in the sense that someone is putting a hook out there and hoping someone else catches the bait. The state of Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection has a great definition for phishing. Phishing is when scammers try to trick you into giving up your personal or confidential information like usernames, passwords, and credit card details through email or fake websites so they can steal your identity or hack into your accounts. You've probably seen this. Almost everyone encounters phishing at least on a weekly basis. Even at work, I get phishing emails all the time. Whether it's our statewide, we have cybersecurity training, or it's an actual phish. The fact of the matter is we sometimes don't know if it is or not. But there are tips to help avoiding phishing because phishes tend to have some common traits. Scammers, when they are phishing, often want to make you feel panicked. They want to make the scenario seem dire and make you feel afraid. So they will try to act like a bank account. They'll try to act like you owe someone money, like your warranties are going out, that something's broken and you need to call them or need to give them information. And that is one of the most common ways that people can get scammed out of their money or end up sending money to a fraudulent person and losing out. And then they're calling the Wisconsin's Consumer Protection for help. There are some key tips to avoid phishing scams. One of those is simply don't respond to emails, letters, phone calls, text messages that claim your bank account is going to be in charge for some unfamiliar subscription. Or really anything that's saying we're going to charge you and you don't expect it. If you are actually worried, the way that you can find out if it's real is to contact your bank, your car company, your mortgage, call whoever that is on a way you have contacted them before. You don't want to use any phone numbers or send an email back through the method that they sent you that is claiming that you're going to be owing them money. That's one of those big ways that people lose out, and people clicking on links themselves can just start a download for some malicious software as well. So you don't want to click on any of those links. You don't want to put in information to a form from a random email from someone claiming to be your bank. And there's a few more tips that come in with phishing and information. One of those, and you might hear this and just think, I would never do that, but I've had it come up to me multiple times. Never allow remote access to your computer unless you absolutely know it's a trusted source. So I know quite a few people that have had need of professional technology help remotely, and so they'll be told that an account is compromised and someone needs remote access, click on this link to download a software that will give us remote access to your computer. I often don't say never do something, but that's one of those never do somethings. Unless you 100% know that service and know who is directly going to do that at that time, or personally, you contacted them, should not give remote access to folks to your computer. I've had this come up and someone then has someone messing around on their computer, going through their sensitive files. It's a dangerous scenario to be in, especially if you are a common person who uses their computer for taxes or any other important files. You keep them on your computer directly. Another thing that you're going to want to avoid in general is just giving out your password, a confirmation code, or anything like that to somebody. that is something that can be a fisher could use, or just someone who's going to be like, hey, we need to know your password. You don't want to give those out to anybody. You'll often see services, banks, the IRS will directly state, we will never ask you for your password. If someone is asking you for your password, do not give them that password. So a bit of a story on phishing and ways that phishing can develop. So I use a PayPal account, and PayPal being kind of an online money transfer service. You may think of Venmo or Cash Apps. You may use things like that as well. But I would get an email in to that said I was being invoiced through PayPal, and it was very official. It had PayPal's logo on it. It came from an @paypal.com email address. The links on them there, they actually go to PayPal's actual website, but it gives a phone number to call. And so now I was tired. I didn't think about it too much. I actually give that phone a call. And this is one of those things you shouldn't do, is calling phone numbers from someone you don't necessarily know. And so, giving them a call, and random. It's not actually PayPal, of course. It's some random person, but at the time, I didn't think about that. And they're asking for different account information. That's when I start to think, like, no, this is not real. And actually looked up what type of scam that is. And it turns out, technically, anybody can invoice you on PayPal, but they can't make you pay an invoice. It's just someone's asking for money and they're calling it an invoice and it comes through. The reason I did that is I looked at my PayPal and there indeed was an invoice going to my PayPal account. But it wasn't a legitimate invoice. I didn't purchase anything. There was nothing that would be expected. So what I should have done is to ignore that email that came in, ignore that completely, and move on. Ignoring these, blocking those senders are one of those ways to go there. Now, something that I didn't know, and this is one of those things that happen where having knowledge helps. Something I didn't know to be aware of was QR codes. QR codes are square graphics. They work like barcodes, and they can be scanned by your phone or your smart device's camera or a QR code scanner. You'll often see these for restaurant menus or to track packages or even on a poster for getting to someone's website. They're quite convenient because you often can't just take a picture of a web link and copy and paste it, though there's some technology that's going that way. But they've also become a common way for scammers to disguise malicious links or login information. I actually didn't know that, and there was a different software I use that was then asking for me to scan a QR code to certify a login, and that actually got my account because it takes that login information by doing that. And so scammers can lure this to a website. They can have you enter personal information, login information, or even force malware onto your account with QR codes as well. So the tip there is to always take a close look at the web address before entering any information to ensure that the place you're going is not some sort of imposter account. Something that you'll also want to be sure of is to make sure that if a sign shows tampering or a flyer, you see something out there, if you, it looks like it's been messed with or been made to be misleading or altered, that can be dangerous as well. So these are all things to keep in mind, and a lot of this is coming from the Department of Agriculture's Trade and Consumer Protection, as these are big issues that a lot of people end up calling them for protecting consumers and preventing scams. Related to phishing is something called spear phishing. Now, spear phishing is often used for these big companies, and what it is a targeted phishing attack. You know, you're going directly, they're accurate. What it's doing is that the scammer is impersonating somebody else to make it seem like the thing that they're sending you to is legitimate or something that should be checked. Oftentimes for companies, this is where they impersonate the CEO, they impersonate someone in their human resources department, or another fairly high up, or someone else who has a large amount of information or important information that their employees or individuals are going to want to see or respond to. And again, this is taking advantage of scammers making people feel afraid. And the thing is, it's not limited to these big company scenarios. This can come at a very localized, individualized level. So one of those things is you have to keep in mind what links that you are receiving from friends or requests that you're receiving from friends. And so I know I'm one of those people. I send my friends links all the time, whether it be to a picture, an image, a video, but I don't ask them to do something or make them feel like they should do something. And that is one of those key areas that you're going to have to look out for, is keep in mind what links are coming to you from your friends, because they can. And if your friend got phished or their account got taken, you might not know it's them sending you that at the time. And that can be very difficult. So even consider what you are receiving from friends, colleagues, someone you know personally, even family members. If their accounts were compromised, they could still send you something and it looks like it's them, but it's actually a spear phishing attack and it could lead to malicious software. Now, that's not to say that you can't click on any links anytime from anyone all the time. You can preview links often by hovering your mouse cursors or tapping and holding on a link, and often it will tell you where that link is going. Now, if you recognize the website URL, that's probably more legitimate. Or you can just say, hey, what is this? In a response to your friend. And they should be able to tell you what it is. And you can go on with your day. It's these little things that are telling us to stop and wait a second that help prevent our information being stolen or taken or hurting someone else. Now, there is another way of protecting yourself that is going to sound extremely simple, but is pretty highly effective. And that is being careful about what you're sharing online. What you share online, depending on where it's being shared or what website it's on, does mean that information is transferred or could be viewed by somebody else, especially with social media. if you are on vacation or planning on going on vacation, you share that on social media. That could mean a good time for someone to actually go to your home because they know you're on vacation and potentially steal something. It could show that you're something may happen. It could give someone who's a scammer the information they need to be able to tell you that, hey, you left your credit card in so-and-so place. Call us and we're going to help you out to recover any funds. And because you think, oh yeah, I was actually on vacation recently, I'll click that link. There can be issues that arise. In general, there's a lot of things you generally shouldn't share online, except through trusted and secure sources. Generally, you're thinking credit card information, loan information, insurance information, passports, driver's license, social security numbers, credit status. Those are types of things you really shouldn't be sharing unless through a secured source or with secure individuals in a way that it cannot go out or there are severe consequences for that information to be leaked somehow. I think when you are doing a mortgage, for example, you're likely going to end up sharing a lot of information. They will often make it be through secure emails or through phone calls or in-person meetings rather than through a standard email. And that is something to take advantage of while you're there. So now we've talked about phishing, we've talked about passwords, but we've also talked about how it can still get to you. Something that has happened to me, we've seen it happen to Kenosha Unified School District, and it's not to say that the Kenosha Unified School District had poor policies in place regarding their network security. If you actually look at their employee handbook, they have very detailed instructions about how to protect their employees' passwords, their data, what is shared and what is not shared on their network. Those protections are in there and those practices are there. The issues are things develop quickly and sometimes we have a bad day and we miss something. We look at it and it's not absolutely sure, but we, you know, we just click on it anyway and things happen. So what to do if someone actually gets to your account? Well, one of those things is to try to update or change that password as soon as possible. If possible, enable two-factor authentication. Two-factor authentication is when you have a second method of gaining access to that account. The best example I can give is you're going to have a password, but then they also text you a security code. Say it's 5 digits or 6 digits and have you input that security code as a second factor. There are also different types of physical devices that can work as a second factor. I often use what's called a YubiKey. So I will put in my password and then I have to plug in a physical key into a computer to access my account. And what those second factors, it double checks that it is you that is accessing that account, even after your account is compromised and you had to change your password. If you had two-factor authentication and they tried to use that password that was the old one, it'll make them have to use that second factor, and because they don't have access to it, they're not going to be able to access that account anymore. But let's say they do get access, there's no two-factor authentication. What do you do? So this is where I mentioned the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection comes in. they have a consumer protection hotline that can be contacted. It can be emailed at datcphotline@wi.gov, or it can be called at 800-422-7128. That'll get you in contact with the state of Wisconsin's Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, where they're going to give you guides, you could be able to file complaints, and give you a lot of assistance when it comes to getting your accounts being protected and more tips that are available for you. The other thing to do, and this isn't one of the ones that's there, but if you have secondary accounts that are still secure, you're going to want to let people know that, especially people you contact often, that if they receive a link from you, to not click on it. It's actually something, a bit of a courtesy, to make sure that this doesn't spread to more people and get around to even more folks. Often those links or those folks that are hacking the account are going to then use your account to try to get more people in line, to try to get more people scammed, to try to get them to try to get their money or try to get their accounts, try to get whatever they're trying to do. Just letting people know, it's like, hey, if you get something from me, it's probably not me. Be careful with that. And the last thing I want to talk about is to just remain vigilant. There may be new methods that come out when it comes to trying to gain access to your accounts, trying to get something to take from you. QR codes was probably something I never even thought about as a way that someone could hack an account. But now seeing that it's definitely a method that someone could use. There may be something in the future that we don't know about yet that we don't necessarily have tips for, but something that is consistent across any of these cases is that feeling of panic, that feeling that something is wrong and that you have to act fast. The key here is not to act fast, to slow down and think about who is contacting me. Do I know this? Does this scenario make logical sense? Is something bad going to happen if I don't do this? Or how can I contact them in an alternative way than what it's saying here to double check if this is an actual problem? It's like how the IRS will say, we aren't going to send you a letter. We're not going to call you. We're not going to text you. You can contact them to see if something is real or not, rather than them contacting you, harassing you for funding or for money. Generally, it's probably not going to happen. And if it does, they're probably going to let you know about it. So I hope that Kenosians can continue to stay safe online with their cybersecurity, and just keep watch for yourselves, for your families, for the community. So when something like the ransomware attack happens at KUSD, we understand, you know, how that happens and how to avoid that next time. Thanks for listening. Xander Miller.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.